Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20, Conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, text number 16. Tasya na bhera budpadmam.
Tasya na bhera budpadmam.
Sahasrar koru diditi.
Sahasrar koru diditi.
Sarva jivani kayo ko.
Sarva jivani kayo ko.
Yatra svayam aputsvarat.
Yatra svayam aputsvarat.
Tasya na bhera budpadmam.
Tasya na bhera budpadmam.
Sahasrar koru didhiti.
Sahasrar koru didhiti.
Sarva jivana kayauko.
Sarva jivana kayauko.
Yatra svayam aputsvarat.
Yatra svayam aputsvarat.
Tasya.
Tasya.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
Nabhe, from the navel, abhut,
sprouted up.
Padmam,
Padma,
a lotus.
Sahasra arka,
a thousand sons.
Uru,
more.
Deity,
with dazzling splendor. Sarva, all, Jivani Kaya, resting place of conditioned souls. Okaha, place, Yatra, where, Svayam, himself, Abhut, emanated, Svarat, the omnipotent. Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
From the navel of the personality of Godhead, Gavatakashaya Vishnu, sprouted a lotus flower effulgent like a thousand blazing suns. This lotus flower is a reservoir of all conditioned souls. And the first living entity who came out of the lotus flower was the omnipotent Brahma. Purport. It appears from this verse that the conditioned souls who rested within the body of the personality of Godhead after the dissolution of the last creation came out in the sum total form of the lotus. This is called Hiranyagarbha. The first living entity to come out was Lord Brahma, who is independently able to create the rest of the manifested universe. The lotus is described here as effulgent as the glare of a thousand suns. This indicates that the living entities as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord are also of the same quality. Since the Lord also diffuses his bodily glare known as Brahma Jyoti. The description of Vaikuntha Loka as stated in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures is confirmed herewith. In Vaikuntha, the spiritual sky, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, electricity or fire. Every planet there is self-effulgent like the sun. Om Jnanatimirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. when the Yamadutas were trying to arrest Ajamil, they were stopped by the Vishnu Dutas, and the Vishnu Dutas were described as being alarming, strikingly effulgent. They're the residents of Vaikuntha. And in Vaikuntha there's no ignorance. Everything is brilliant, like the sun. So the original position of the living entity is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, eternal, full of knowledge and blissful, and is brilliant like the sun, effulgent. And because the living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, then they have they have that potency, have that power, they have that brilliance. Prabhupada mentions that we can understand the nature of the Supreme by studying the qualities of the living entities, because the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme. Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva, what is it? Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. So the living entities are a part and parcel of the Supreme, and so if we analyze the qualities of the living entities, then we can also appreciate the qualities of the Supreme. It's just that the qualities of the living entities, while they're in quality the same, just as a drop of water is liquid and wet, and if it's from the ocean, also salty. So a drop of the sea has the same qualities as the whole ocean, but in quantity it's minute. So Prabhupada gives the example. We have the capacity to produce chemicals, right? We can all produce perspiration, right? But it's only a limited amount of perspiration that we can create. Whereas Krishna, from his perspiration, he can create oceans of water. And we're able to do that by achincha shakti, inconceivable potency. None of us know how our fingernails are growing. Right? Anybody know how their fingernails are growing? No? But every 2 weeks you've got to cut your fingernails because they keep on growing. So this is achincha shakti. We have the capacity to do things we don't even know how we do it. So Krishna also has achincha shakti. Actually, he's the source of achincha shakti. And that achincha shakti, basically by his desire, the universe is created. It happens. Just like we have, Prabhupada gives the example, we have sophisticated machines, right? You press a button, boom, and then automatically it works. And you don't know how, we don't know exactly how it works. You know, press a button and then, like a computer. I mean, there's somebody who knows how it works, but generally we press a button and boom, it starts up and off it goes. So when Krishna wants to start the creation, he just desires it and then it automatically functions. As if it's as a machine, we mentioned yesterday. Yantra Runhani Mayaya. The living entities are all being controlled by Krishna. Ishvaraha Savabhutanam. He's the controller of everybody. Who is situated, Hridesh Arjuna Tishtati. The super soul is situated within everybody's heart. And the living entity is also situated within the heart of this body. And this body is just like a machine. And this machine is being controlled by Krishna. The whole of the material creation and the spiritual creation is all being controlled by the Lord through the agency of his various potencies. Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Sruyate. It is described. The Vedic literature basically describes how the universe is working ultimately under Krishna's control, but through his agencies, his various energies or potencies. We have a chincha shakti in that we can produce chemicals. Right? The body produces chemicals by which it lives, by which we live. I was just reading an article about what's in our gut, right? In our stomach. A lot of what's in our stomach, the microbes, aren't there when we are born. This is an illustration of how the whole creation works in such an intricate and finely tuned way that is just mind-boggling, right? How we even come to exist is mind-boggling. What to speak of the fact, or not to speak of the fact, that we're able to maintain ourselves for some time. We're dependent upon bacteria to aid our digestion. Those bacteria are not in our stomachs when we're born. Right? We pick up those bacteria by crawling around on the floor, you know, and just digesting. And a lot of it is fecal matter, right? You know what I mean by fecal matter? Stool, right? There's the E. coli. It's everywhere, more than we would like to think or imagine. It's everywhere, and we eat it or we ingest it, right? And we actually need it to have a functioning digestive system. Isn't that amazing? Huh? The universe is created in such a way so that all of the ingredients for life are provided fully for us. Right? Everything, it's complete. What is it? Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachate. It's all perfect and complete. And is designed in such a way so that when we crawl around the floor as babies, we eat dirt and all sorts of other things, right, that we stick in our mouths, then they go into our stomach and they create the flora in our gut by which we can digest food and live a healthy life. Isn't that amazing? You know, we actually have to ingest dirt and other things to live. And we see even Krishna's eating dirt, right? Or no, he doesn't own up to it. So, anyway, this is an amazing creation. And, you know, the more that it's investigated, the more we discover what a brilliant, what an amazing arrangement it is, and how it works according to plan, or according to a plan, somebody's plan. It's not just a ramshackle, haphazardous chance, series of events, but rather is deliberate and it has a purpose. So here we see the personality of Godhead. Garbhadakshay Vishnu has entered into the inert material creation universe. One universe. It's said that there's unlimited universes, material universes. But here we're getting a description of how the universe is started, how it starts. And this is quite an amazing description. You know, we're given a description by the scientific community that the creation comes about from a big bang. Right? Basically an explosion. And out of an explosion we get some order. Although, you know, most explosions create a mess. Right? In our experience. Most explosions just destroy things. But apparently, according to the speculations of the modern scientific community, we get the opposite. We get a fully functional, ordered, consistent creation from an explosion, which defies all, you know, any of our experience in reality. Explosions in our experience, basically, you know, what is it? Terrorists killing people. And it doesn't create order, it creates disorder, dysfunction, chaos. The words. Now, the Vedic version is quite challenging for us. If we've been brought up to think or to believe that everything came from an explosion. Or that we evolved into what we are now. You know, this whole idea of evolution and, you know, things coming from a big bang. We've been conditioned to believe these kind of stories. But that's all they are. They're just stories. There's no evidence that we can, that we're able to easily see or experience that confirms these stories. We just tend to believe it. And when we hear of Krishna expanding in the form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then from his navel sprouts a lotus, and basically the lotus is the sum total of all of the living entities, And it's described, here it's described as being effulgent like a thousand blazing suns. It's also described as being intensely hot. Intensely hot. Which is interesting, you know, in Mayapur, in the Nrisimha Arti, right? Everybody crowd, you know, it's hard to see Lord Nrisimha Day, so everybody crowds in. And if you want to be right in front, then you're basically squeezed in. So everybody's been chanting and singing and dancing in Mangala, you know, for Mangalartik. And then for the Nrisimha Puja, the Nrisimha Arti, everybody jams in. And it gets really hot. Right? Really hot. So, you know, it's a relief when the Tulsi prayers come because then, you know, everybody moves away and you can get a bit of air, a bit of fresh air. So, where does all that heat come from? Right? The temperature goes up. Where does the heat come from? It's coming from all of the you know, the beating hearts, pushing blood around the body, and it's all ultimately coming from the soul, situated within the body, within the heart. Huh? That's the source. That's the source of life. And from it comes the power or the potency, just as Krishna has the power or the potency to create the material universe and to make it work and function by his different shaktis or potencies. The presence of the spirit soul within the body, that's us within the body, provides the body with all of the shakti or potency to do what it does. That's where the potency to grow fingernails comes from. The potency to digest, you know, breakfast. The potency to create, to destroy, to maintain things. All of these potencies come from the presence of the soul. And ultimately those potencies come from Krishna. So, you know, we have various potencies. So as a measure of those potencies, if Krishna is unlimited, then why not? Why can't he manifest the creation through the presence of the lotus flower that grows from his navel? And you know, the Vedic literature gives us a consistent set of descriptions on how this process takes place. You know, it is easy to dismiss these stories of the Bhagavatam as has been done, as mythology. Right? Myth. What's a myth? Usually, what's a myth? Something, huh? What's a myth? Something made up. Huh? Something just made up. But it's not. It's a serious description of how the material creation is manifest consistently, creation after creation after creation after creation. So the Lord is Ujwala, which means brilliant, and here we've got Didhiti, dazzling splendor. Didhiti, with dazzling splendor. So it's brilliant. the forms of the spiritual world, and Prabhupada gives the example his quotes, the Bhagavad Gita, Nadha Bhasayate Suryo Nasa Sankana Pavakaha. I can't remember the rest of that verse. But anyway, there's no need of sunshine, there's no need of the moon, there's no need of electricity, because everything is brilliant in the spiritual realm. Everything is illuminated by its internal spiritual potency. There's no darkness in the spiritual world. There's only darkness in the material world. And so the Vedas say, Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Come out of darkness, come into the light. So, manifestation of the lotus stem and its brilliance comes from the original brilliance of the living entities, which is fully manifest in the spiritual world, but in the material world is covered over. Our original spiritual identity is covered over by the material energy. Our business in the human form, any form actually, is to re-establish or uncover our original spiritual identity. That's our business, our purpose in life, is to recover or re-establish our original spiritual form, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, or reawaken our original identity, which is brilliant, effulgent. You know, you see in the devotees great enthusiasm, and you can see their effulgence. Have you ever looked at people's effulgence? Huh? Look at the top of their heads and you'll see. You have a look. Don't look at mine, I don't have one. So, but, you know, you can see it. And that's ultimately coming from the spirit soul. And especially when we rise early in the morning, and basically we use the best part of the day to recover or re-establish ourselves in our spiritual position. And you can see it when a devotee is very fixed up in their sadhana, then they become very enthusiastic, even despite the fact that there are problems. In the material world, there's always going to be a problem. But despite the problems, those who are connected to their spiritual energy or their spiritual identity are not discouraged by the problems. That's just part of existence, that there's going to be problems. But one who's, and you know, they're coming and going. Advanta, what is it? They have a beginning and an end. And so the person situated on a spiritual platform is able to tolerate the comings and goings of material existence, because they know, we know, it's temporary. It doesn't last. This is the nature of the the nature of the spirit soul. We're able to withstand all of the changes of material existence. We know that we're not those changes. We remain the same person constantly. That's part of the brilliance of the identity of the soul. So, it is quite challenging, in one sense, to hear that the creation comes from Garbhodakasai Vishnu, who lies down within the Garbhodak ocean, within the egg, if you like, the Brahmanda, shaped like an egg. And from that lotus, then comes all of the living entities, the first one being Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, as described here, is empowered personality. What have we got here? Svara, the omnipotent. This lotus flower is the reservoir of all conditioned souls, and the first living entity who came out of the lotus flower was the omnipotent Brahma. Lord Brahma is empowered then to order and structure and develop the material creation further from what has been provided by Krishna or by Karanadakasai Vishnu. Garbhodakasai Vishnu then enters into that universe. Then from him comes the lotus flower, from the lotus flower comes Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma then takes the raw ingredients of the material energy and starts to put it into order so that all of the other living entities situated within the lotus stem can come out and be and have their basically have their desires fulfilled. Or they may not have their desires fulfilled, but they're given the facility to pursue those desires. We're not always, you know, just because you desire, we mentioned this yesterday, just because you desire something doesn't mean that automatically you're going to get it. Right? You may desire so many things, but if you're not qualified, just like, for example, I might like to have a Rolls Royce. And I could go to the Rolls Royce, you know, dealer and say, I want a Rolls Royce. And they can say, sure, you can have a Rolls Royce. Can you pay for it? Right? And if you can't pay for it, forget about having a Rolls Royce. So you need to be qualified. Qualification is you need money in the bank. What that means is you need to have the karma, the good karma, which will then afford you the money, which will then afford you the opportunity to buy the car. But if you don't have the good karma, then you won't have the good car. Right? So the material creation is provided for us to pursue our desires, but ultimately, it is meant for us to purify our desire so that we can again be reunited and placed in our original position as a servant of Krishna. In the material world, we think of ourselves as masters, but actually we're all servants. Nobody is a master. In the material creation, everybody is a servant, even in the spiritual world. So this idea of being a servant is perfected when we use it in its proper relationship with Krishna. And so the material creation is designed in such a way so that we get an opportunity to exercise our masterful, you know, desires, if you like. But ultimately, we're bound to be frustrated because even though it appears that we are a master, actually we're not. We're a servant of the material energy. That's how we indirectly serve. But better that we convert that indirect service to direct service because that's our natural position. And in our natural position, that's where we'll be happy and that's where we'll be satisfied. But the material creation, you know, the heat of the lotus and the brilliance of the lotus is coming from the desires of the living entities. in the material world to enjoy separately from Krishna. And the material creation is designed in such a way so that we get an opportunity to exercise those desires, but ultimately we will be frustrated. The material creation is designed to frustrate us. The only way that we're going to be happy is if we can purify our desires. Desire can't be stopped. Desire is natural to the living entity. You can't get rid of it because it's inherent to who we are as individuals, as persons. But the desire has to be sublimated, it has to be purified, it has to change. And that desire is to ultimately, instead of pleasing ourselves, it is to please Krishna. And then automatically, if we're able to act, if we're able to purify our desires so that we're pleasing Krishna, then automatically we'll be taken care of, we'll be looked after, we'll be happy. So that's our business. Our business is to purify our desires. And of course, that's why we chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. The more we chant, the more we're able to purify those desires, the more we're able to be sheltered by the spiritual energy. And under the shelter of the spiritual energy, then we'll be engaged in Krishna's service. And because that's our natural position, that's our natural condition, we'll be happy in that, being reinstated in our original natural position. So, this is part of the process by which the living entities are manifest in the material world. And generally, we enter the material world for material purposes. But when we become frustrated by the continual discouragement that we get from the material energy, we'll then start to look for the alternative, the positive alternative, which is to be engaged again in Krishna's service. It's mentioned here in the beginning of this chapter that what this is ultimately talking about is how, the question's been asked, how has Manu provided for the liberation of the living entities? So on the one hand, we're getting a description of the material creation and how it's binding us and keeping us under its control. But at the same time also, within this description is the... And the Bhagavatam pretty much is all about this principle of how the devotees enter and how the Lord himself enters into the material world and provides opportunities for the living entities to get out of the material world. So there's a description of how it's created, but along with those descriptions are the narrations of the activities of Krishna and his various incarnations and Krishna and his devotees. And you know, how the devotees basically deal with the problems that arise as a result of living in the material creation and how one's able to transcend those difficulties or those obstacles and ultimately be reinstated in their original spiritual position. And you know, how valuable those appearances of the Lord are and how valuable the association of the devotees is. Because basically the association of the devotees gives us an opportunity to be engaged in Krishna's service and to ultimately be reconnected with him. Okay, any comments or questions? It's a codicil today. They didn't put up the notice on the board, but it is a codicil. Any comments? Questions? What is Krishna's desire? Krishna's desire is to fulfill the desires of the devotees. The devotees' desire is to fulfill Krishna's desires. One of the reasons why, and this is, we were discussing this yesterday and it's in the previous verses, one of the reasons why the material creation is manifest is because we want it. And so therefore Krishna facilitates it. Huh? We want to blame somebody for the struggles and the difficulties and the strife that we experience in the material world. And have a guess what? We're the cause of it. So, even Krishna facilitates the desires of the devotees when they're not devotees. Huh? When they want to live separately from him, even Krishna facilitates that. Stays with us as the super soul. Just waiting for us to wake up. Right? So, Krishna is a pleasure seeker, Anandamaya Bhyasat, and he likes to enjoy, but his greatest enjoyment is seeing that his devotees are enjoying. And so therefore, you know, there's a synergy between what Krishna wants and what the devotees want, and it's based on love and affection. So Krishna likes to enjoy with his devotees in various pastimes. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. So what's his desire? He appears to protect and to engage in pastimes with his devotees. And, you know, as a consequence also, he appears to kill a few demons as well. So basically have a bit of fun, right? Everybody likes to have fun. Where did that notion of having fun comes from? Krishna. What do you think? Of course, there's a lot more serious things as well. But basically, you know, have a good time. Have a party. Huh? That's what Krishna likes to do. Have a party. Sankirtan party. Huh? Or, you know, we see the Rasalila. You know, the dancing with the gopis. It's said that it endured for the, was it the day or the night of Brahma? Is that right? Huh? So, you know, everybody likes to go out dancing on a Saturday night, no? Huh? Where do we get that from? We get it from Krishna. He likes to dance. We like to dance. So when Krishna appears, then he arranges it in such a way. He gets the demigods come along, his eternal associates come along, and then they perform their nitya lila, and ultimately the devotees are there to please Krishna, and Krishna's there to reciprocate with his devotees. There must be some desire to enjoy in the material realm. It's based on desire. And we know that enjoyment can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. So unless one's a nitya siddha who descends into the material creation on behalf of the Lord, which is a special case, then within each of the living entities there's a desire, subtle or gross, to enjoy the material energy. And it may be performed under the, or within even, the performance of devotional activities, right? We see it even with the devotees. They are often provided facilities and can become bewildered by those material facilities that arise as a result of the performance of devotional service. But it ignites that desire to want to enjoy. So enjoying spirit can be manifest even through the performance of devotional activities. And that's why one has to, why we perform our sadhana and why we chant Hare Krishna and purify our consciousness, because those tendencies to want to enjoy separately from Krishna are prominent within those who enter into the material world. And as one associates with the material energy and is engaged in the interactions with the material energy, then those desires to enjoy separately from Krishna will manifest and become more prominent. But the ultimate goal, or the superior goal, is to be a pure devotee where those activities are performed despite those tendencies for material enjoyment, one engages in one's sadhana, and a sadhana is designed to, or is meant to, enable us to purify our desires so that our motivation is not for our own enjoyment, but ultimately our motivation is for Krishna's pleasure and for Krishna's purposes. And so that opportunity is provided for the residents of Satya Yuga or Kutta Yuga more prominently. And there's more pious, if you like, residency in the material realm in the Satya Yuga. But the material energy is designed in such a way so that it actually, if one stays in the material energy and works within that environment, gradually it'll pull you down. And so we see in the Kali Yuga, we have the situation that we see at the moment where most people are asuras and there are very, very few devotees. But in the Kali Yuga, we get the opportunity of being able to chant Hare Krishna and be, despite all of the contamination, we can become pure at heart by the chanting of Hare Krishna and by being engaged in devotional service. So, in one sense, it's easy to be bewildered just by the externals. So we think, oh, Satya Yuga, everybody's such a great devotee, but actually not. There's that desire to enjoy, and that's why the living entity is there in the material world. It's on a more subtle and on a more pious platform, but it's still a desire to enjoy. There's also the opportunity to be purified and to get out of material existence again. In Kali Yuga, it's a lot more, obvious in that there's so much impious action or activity. But the opportunities that exist for those who perform the Yuga Dharma of meditation in Satya Yuga, it's available in the Kali Yuga. What is it? Kalo Tadhari Kirtanat. What is it? Kritayam Jayato Vishnum. Tretayam Yajato Mukai. Dwapayam Parichajayam Kalo Tadhari Kirtanat. So it's mentioned. The results of meditation, the results of performing sacrifice, the results of worshipping the deity that were available in the Krita Yuga, in the Treta Yuga, in the Dwapa Yuga, are all available for those who chant Hare Krishna. So despite the fact that the Kali Yuga is a much more inauspicious place or situation, it still has its advantages. Each yuga has its benefits. And the benefit in the Kali Yuga is very simple. It's contained within the chanting. Okay, I think we'll finish here. Kandarasi Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Brinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.